Good evening, everyone. This is Gary, joined by Sam and Jeff. And tonight, we are going to have a conversation around this campfire with David Geyer. And he is a campfire guy. He's part of Base Camp. But tonight, he would love to talk about how do you help a man find his voice or get his voice back? How do we find that journey for ourselves as well? And if you have spent any time with David or you've listened to a couple of podcasts that we've done with him, you know very well that this is his heart in ministry, in his effect with other people, especially men, but men and women as well. And this is so much him, helping a man get his voice back, whether that man feels like he's never discovered his voice and didn't think he had one, or his voice was taken away from him, and especially those men. That's where David is pulled to help those kind of men. So his voice with us and for us is enormous for all of us in Base Camp. And so, David, I'm really glad you're doing this and really have been looking forward to this time. So why don't you start us into this topic, especially as you want to do this around the movie The King's Speech?
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Gary. The phrase, you know, find your voice comes from the film, and I think let me put out there, because it'll be, I think, where we go for the conversation. I look at that as meaning it's a man being known, and knowing himself, knowing that someone else knows him, and in that he finds the voice. So, you know, finding your voice can also mean, you know, behavior and what flows out and what you step into and all of that when life opens up. But for us, and my wife and I, Becky's included in this, for us, to find a person's voice really means to see them first. Because I think we live in a world where very, very few of us are ever really seen or known. And so that's a pretty core value to what we do. Our little ministry has a statement. It's we want to make time, space, and opportunities for people to be known, to know themselves, to know others, and to know God. And I think the King's Speech is just such a beautiful picture of a man who's relationally isolated. He isn't known. I mean, he's a public figure by all means, but in a real way, in a human way, he's not known at all. In fact, in the real story in history, his first encounter with Lionel Logue, Bertie, who would become king, he spent over an hour and a half with Lionel, and pretty quickly went into his childhood. So there was a need there to be known. So you know, I walked into the film. And this not happened to me very often, but when I went and walked into this film, it was really crowded. We were a little bit late. It was crazy. And I just got this, I mean, I became conscious of going, God, if there's something in this film, I don't want to miss it. I mean, I heard good things, but there was just that sense of somehow this is going to be important. And I hadn't seen it yet. And sure enough, I think it's a great framework to explain what we all really, really want. And that is to be known, to have deep connection and to have real friendship. So, we're not going to use the trailer because of just the nature of the call. So let me just give you a little bit of background. I'm assuming everybody's seen the movie. So what's maybe not as widely known is that at this point, before Bertie or Lord Albert, who would eventually become King George, before he met Lionel Logue, nine experts had tried to treat him, and with no success at all. And of course, this was his stammer, his stuttering. It was pronounced. It was paralyzing. The movie refers to it when Lord Albert gave the closing speech at Wembley. I think it was the British Empire Exhibition in 1925. It was horrible, and it was a real ordeal emotionally for him and for the public who watched him. Okay, so he had tried unsuccessfully through nine different experts to try to find some healing in this. And what is also, when I was doing a little bit of reading and research, what I found was interesting that just within a few decades before this, physicians, experts, whatever you want to call them, were
doing some really crazy things to try to cure stuttering. And one of them is they would actually perform surgery on the person's tongue, and many of the patients would die. So, I mean, for me, that's just kind of rich in meaning that, you know, those who are supposed to have the expertise, those who are supposed to have the life to try to bring to a person, many times we end up shooting our wounded. And so the treatment had not worked up until that point. And so, you know, then enters, right, you know, Lionel Nogue, this eccentric guy who in today's world would probably, you know, be doing something illegal. I mean, speech therapy wasn't a profession then, mm-hmm. but, you know, he had very little formal training, if any, and he has no letters after his name, right? But he's going to offer who he's become, and he's going to offer the experience that he had in World War One.
Right, and David, even his upbringing is not impressive, right? I mean, it's not like he came from this, you know, socially elite family or anything. I mean, it's just amazing the man he became from what he came from.
He was obscure, and actually the only reason he was introduced to the royal family is he had helped a fairly well-known stage performer, a woman, and he'd helped her with some vocal exercises, and she's the one that recommended him. So you have Birdie, and the film goes into this too, but this is important. So if you look at some of the family members and even Lionel's notes, Birdie was a man, as a child actually, he was easily scared, it says, frightened of his own shadow, and he would be moved to tears quickly. And he was sickly. He was plagued with stomach problems. And so you have a little boy that lived under the shadow of his big brother, easily frightened, dealt with fear, was dealing with fear in, I think, in a pronounced way, because Lionel Logue mentions it in his own medical diaries or whatever you would call those when he was treating him. And he's the one who's going to have this, you know, destiny of becoming king thrust on him. And in a really awkward way, right? I mean, no king had ever abdicated their throne voluntarily in the history of this nation. But his older brother wants to have a relationship with a married woman, an American, and so he gives up the throne. I think he only sat on the throne 10 months. So here's an insecure, fearful man. We would call him a crybaby, I think, if we would have met him as a child. Lionel Logue put in his journal, he seems to be afraid of his own shadow. I think that's where I got those words. So, you know, that's a little bit of background on this man. And sorry, I'm getting a little bit lost here, but
let me stop you for 1 second. Let me just ask you on a personal note with you, what hit you probably the deepest about the movie, just about David Guyer for a second?
Yeah, I think it's because here is a man who is known publicly, right? I mean, everyone would know Lord Albert, and yet he was relationally isolated and not known in the ways that would be life-giving to him. And so the story is the story of a man who is eccentric and has his own ways, but he's become enough, if you will, that he can even spar with Lord Albert, and he pursues him, and he wants to know him. And so it's the story of a really cool friendship, which, again, in history, ended up being a lifelong friendship. It was a friendship that had a rough beginning. But that, for me, is what strikes me. We've come to define loneliness as not being alone. I don't think Americans are, you know, struggle with being by ourselves. In fact, we very seldom get time completely alone. We define loneliness as not being known. And if you look at that, if you look at it that way, there would be some, and I agree with them, that would say the U.S. is the most relationally isolated culture, not only in the world today, but maybe in all of history.
David,
that's a big deal.
Yeah, David, this is Sam.
One of the
lines that I like about the movie, and I think you alluded to this right at the beginning, was that Lionel saw Birdie. I mean, remember, there's a point where he says, "That's the bravest man I've ever seen."
Yes.
I don't think Birdie sees that, but I think part of what you're talking about in this friendship here is It's not just having someone close to you in physical proximity, but it's someone seeing you. It's someone really knowing you personally. And Birdie knows Lionel. Excuse me, Lionel knows Birdie in a way that Birdie doesn't even know. And that's, I think, part of what you're talking about. That's what really moves me, is how deeply Lionel's seeing into Birdie's life, and then I think that changes Birdie's life completely. Someone else sees him and knows the real him and draws it out of him.
Yeah, you nailed it. And that moves into the first point we wanted to look at. So thank you, Sam. You might even have that outline in front of you. But what I wanted to put out there first was this idea of, I take you seriously more than you take you seriously. And that's what I've encountered with men. It is amazing. Yeah, it is amazing how little we think of ourselves.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, in the right religious situation, it's the perfect storm. Because even under the name of Christianity, religion goes right with that and says, yeah, you're a nothing, right? And it's amazing, the men that come for life coaching, they come for various reasons. They usually don't even know why they're there. They can't articulate it. And I think it's because they're just lonely.
Mm-hmm.
They're not known. And there's something inside that wants to have substance. They want to have significance, and they can't find it. So the first challenge is to go with the man to say, you know, hey, remember, you know, Lionel says, listen, these are my rules. These are the rules we're going to play with. In fact, that scene kind of captured that. Because when they first meet each other, he's like, well, what should I call you? Right? And they're sparring, right? Because Lord Albert says, you know, well, you call me your Royal Highness, and then after that, sir. And, you know, Lionel says, well, that's a little formal for what we're trying to do here. And what I love about it, you just said it, Sam, he won't give the superficial honor that the world gives Birdie, because it's meaningless. But he's actually the only one in the story, next to his wife, I believe, that really sees the man, and in the end will honor him deeply. So that's something that we have to, I think, move through when we are walking through life with the man and developing a friendship. The next thing that I encounter a lot of times with a man is this idea of, will you fix my problem? That's what I'm here for. And you see that, right? In the scene where I think he says, I think Lionel says, well, you know, tell me a little bit about your childhood. And he's like, childhood? That's not what I'm here for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are you here for? Well, I bloody well stammer. Right? Like, I'm not going to let you in. Just fix me. Do you guys remember the movie The Kid, right? I mean, it seems that you guys have been to some of the men's events. You've seen these skits. But it reminded me of Russell, right? I mean, remember, he's losing his mind. Of course, the story is set up that he is going to understand his own story. He's going to find the strength of his life. He's going to have some understanding around his life. But at the beginning, he goes to the psychiatrist and says, just give me some pills. I don't have time for a mental breakdown. Just make this kid go away. And a lot of that's the door in. And I think it comes from the culture that we live in. We live in a very mechanistic culture, a very modern culture. And it's dying in some ways. But, right, we have solutions to everything. Just fix my problem. And that's where Birdie begins. Well, what do you mean? You know, go into my childhood. I just want you to fix my stammer so I can speak. And, of course, Lionel holds his own, right? He says, oh, okay, well, do you know any jokes? Right? He's working his way in into the richer parts of the man.
Right. Hey, and by the way, David, I just want to let you know, I put that chart up that you wanted me to put up.
Okay.
And guys, if you just refresh your Basecamp page, you'll see where there was a video, now there's a chart that David will probably be referring to in a little bit. So anyway, I wanted you to know that.
Yeah. How do you do refresh, by the way, guys?
It's usually up at the top where the address is for the website you're on, and
okay.
It has a little arrow or has something. It just kind of indicates you can re-click that
Great.
And refresh it. So.
Well, good. And thanks for talking, and keep talking, guys, because it's a little awkward just kind of speaking into a phone here.
Well, now that you've said that, David, I'm gonna interrupt and come back. Actually, I was just thinking about the first point you would make about how Lionel is taking Birdie more seriously than Birdie's taking himself.
Yeah.
Remember, I don't know if you remember this, but I was meeting with you with you once, and you told me about an experience just that had happened a week or two before, where you had just been downcast about something, and you're walking down the street kind of downcast. A man in a pickup drive-by stops and says, "Hey, man, what happened to you? Let's go kick his ass." And
yes.
I remember thinking, that was actually a perfect sort of way a friend comes alongside someone and says, "I'm going to take seriously what's happening with you." Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. And if you knew the man and you knew what he was like, it would be even all the more special because he's not that way. So, yeah, and that was a special gift. You know, I'm going to give you guys a bit of a story. I don't want to be too random here, but this bit about we need to take each other more seriously than we do, it's huge because it's all over the church, sadly. Years ago, I mentioned the word that we end up shooting our wounded. God came for my wife, and this was a crazy, and I can't give you the story, but it was a crazy way that he came, and he gave her this name, and it was Florence Nightingale. And, you know, at first, Edgar's like, wow, that didn't sound too sexy. You know, Florence Nightingale. But she said, "David, I think God spoke to me this morning." And I'm like, well, you know, that's really cool. I mean, we all have kind of an image of her, right? She's a nurse. But Becky went off and started to research her story. And what was amazing, during the Crimean War, I think that's how you say it, more soldiers, more wounded, were dying in the hospitals than they would have if they would have stayed out in the field. And she was appalled by that. The place that should have been bringing healing and life was so dysfunctional that the probability of you getting better when you were admitted into the hospital plummeted because you were there. And that really spoke to my wife because she has seen the effect of religion and this sort of diminishing, I don't want to go into it, but I think you guys catch where I'm going, and it feeds that. So when you meet a man, especially if he's been in the church and maybe he's used to, I don't know, whatever culture he comes from within that, a lot of times you have to fight that. You have to say, listen, you matter. I take you seriously. In fact, the problem or whatever that you may have brought you to me really isn't the problem.
What you're saying here is even with Birdie is the problem that Birdie comes with, which just his voice thing, isn't the real issue. There's something
you got. Yeah, right.
Okay.
Because, you
so
know, sadly, again, even – well, everywhere in the world, including the church, we kind of have this, all right, you know, show up. We'll give you some tips. You know, we'll show you how to improve yourself. We'll fix your marriage. We'll fix your whatever. And it leaves the person out. We're just something to be fixed. And so really where they go next then is to realize the problem is really never the problem. Birdie stutters, right? And it's hurtful, but it comes from places, and it's also a doorway into those places where you know, life could reside, life could spring forth. And if I can, guys, look at this little diagram. I drew it. I'm not a great, you know, guy with computers, but that
we've all been wondering what this diagram means, David. You've whetted our curiosity.
It's a great roller coaster. It's Cedar Point. No, geez. It's a way to diagram this journey. So sometimes a person, whether it's a friend or maybe a little bit formal, more formal like in life coaching, the horizontal line is what I would just call normal, what we call normal, okay, what we want in life. And the first squiggly line, the darker one, I think it's supposed to be blue, that has the shorter heights and depths, they'll come in and say, I'm trying to diagram the dialogue. Okay, see these little dips below my normal? I need you to take those away. I need you to get rid of those. I just want my life to go back to normal. And, of course, if you really pursue that, even in my own thinking, when I say that, really what I'm trying to say is I want my life pain-free. Okay? And here's the amazing part. A good friend will say, okay, see those dips below that line? That's really not your problem, okay? What is my problem? Your problem is that you're nowhere near the bottom.
What?
Yeah. What you think is the problem, we're actually going to have it crash and burn, and we're just going to put it aside. And we're going to – your problem was that you – whatever you think you're feeling, you're not even feeling enough. It's my way of trying to diagram deadness. Deadness. We walk around like living dead people, and if something's giving us some form of pain, we just kind of want to anesthetize and get rid of it. But the real path of journey is to say, oh, actually, you're here because you think you hurt. I would actually say you don't hurt enough. There's a deadness to your life. And I think in Bertie's case, there was pain around his stuttering, right? I mean, he's scared. He was embarrassed when he would speak. But that was just the surface of really deep pain in his life that someone needed to help him go into. And again, I know I'm making more of the film than, you know, it's probably portrayed there. I'm using it as a framework. But let's put it this way. The problem is never the problem. The problem is, are we alive? In fact, are we even alive to the problems? I mean, Jesus says, you know, I'm going to give you life and give you more abundantly. Then he means, okay, you know, you get all of life more abundantly. So when something hurts, it'll actually really hurt now more. When something is supposed to bring joy, it'll bring even more joy now. You're alive. You're present. You're engaged. That's the life of Christ. And that's what I see with a man. He thinks he's coming in for something that's, you know, really troubling, maybe an addiction or whatever. And what's beautiful is if you can kind of set that aside and go into the man, he starts to feel more deeply, and you watch life show up in the friendship. He's unedited. He's more of himself. You know, Gary, I love your teachings in the calling where it says, you know, these little cliches in the church where it says, well, you know, what is it? The world doesn't need to see you. They need to see God. Or, you know, right. The more you're like Jesus, the more you kind of disappear or something.
Yeah.
Right? Because I must decrease and Jesus must increase. Words of John the Baptist, and totally taken out of context. And I don't know. When a man is being healed, when a man is known, when a man is pursued by God and by others who love him, he starts to show up. That's redemption. When you become more like Jesus, you become more like you.
Right. Well, you know, the funny thing that dawns on me is, yeah, I mean, there's times when, you know, I want to hang out with you or somebody, you know, and I'm thinking, I don't kind of want to hang out with Jesus right now. I want to hang out with David or, you know, or Jack or somebody like that, which means it's God in them. But, yeah, when it's like, this person's gone and gone, disappeared, and it's just Jesus. You kind of go, wait, okay, something's kind of weird here. And I'll tell you this, one of the scenes, and I know you're touching on this right now, but one of the scenes that really grabbed me from the movie was that scene that was kind of in the center, right, that you and I talked about earlier off this call, you know, where he's talking to him, and he's finally getting him to admit some things, like he was forced to be a left-handed or right-handed instead of left-handed.
Yep.
And eventually into the way he was treated by his family, and you know, especially by the maid, the nursemaid they had there, and so on. And then what really got me in the movie was not only all of that, where little by little, you're right, he was going deeper and deeper and deeper. He had the courage to go deeper into these things, which obviously were in his memory. He just didn't have any place to ever deal with it or walk into it. Was when memory brought over, he said, "Hey, I'll take another glass of that scotch or whatever they had," and he came over and poured him a glass and clinked his glass and said, "Hey," and he said, "Thank you," and he said, "What are friends for?" And he said,
mm-hmm.
"I don't know. I wouldn't know."
Right.
I mean, that brought me to tears because I thought that to me was the saddest part, because even the other things he talked about could have been worked through earlier if he had the friends, which is what Lionel became. So, yeah.
Oh, you got it. And, you know, even early in the film, what I love and is when he says, you know, okay, you're not going to go there. Great. Well, then do you know any jokes? And Bertie says, what does he say? Timing's not my strong suit.
Right.
Okay.
And it's hilarious. He's like, you know, because it's like, dude, I'm a stutterer. Do you think I tell jokes, right? Do you think I'd ever get the punchline out? But even initially, because of the way Lionel is relaxed in the sense of, hey, I want to know you. No, I'm not going to call you your royal hiney. You know, I'm, what's your name? Let's be friends. Immediately, you start to even see the real man come out. What's fun about it is that that comeback was not in the script of the film. Colin Firth started to enjoy himself in the company of Jeffrey Rush, and when Rush put the line out there, no any jokes, Colin Firth does this little improv and says, well, you know, timing's not exactly my strong suit. That, for me, was a hint of what we long for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I even choke up just thinking that. Hey, your addiction's, in the end of the day, not that big a deal.
Yeah.
You know, whatever that is. Or whatever it is you came to get fixed with is just not nearly as interesting as you are. Why don't we talk about you? Who are you? You are worth hearing. You're worth knowing about. Your life is worth something. It's interesting. And I think that's what Logue, you know, I guess I'm interpreting into the film, but that's what he does. That's what he does. Remember, you know, of course, it's the beginning of a powerful, beautiful scene where he's, you know, he wants to paint, or he wants to put glue on the struts of a little biplane. And Lionel says, no, unless you, you know, unless you go the way I want you to go, rules are rules. And he goes, I want you to sing your paint. I want you to sing what's going on because you won't stutter. And he says, you know, something like, I'm not going to sit here and warble.
Mm-hmm.
And Lionel says, why? You can do it with me. And I love the line. He says, well, because you're peculiar. And Lionel says, oh, thank you. I'll take that as a compliment. I mean, right there. You see the realness there? Lionel is, Lionel, and that's another good point of the film, Lionel is comfortable in his own skin. Okay, thanks. I'm peculiar. Appreciate it. It's a compliment. There's an uneditedness there. They're starting to become real men again, and they're becoming real friends.
Yeah, and isn't there, I mean, there's something so powerful. I mean, I've experienced this with men towards my life. I've seen this between men, and I think I've been a part of it with other men as well, that when you can be with a man, just like you're saying, and he can talk about his struggles, and the men don't react like they're offended, appalled, scared, but they can listen to it like, yeah, and just give me a turn when you're done. There's just something powerful about saying, you don't scare me. I'm not afraid of you. And so I love that, you know, that Birdie, or that Lionel gets Birdie to start doing these things. And he can even joke with them, as you said, about them, just to make light of them, because, hey, we all have stuff. But I love how Lionel can so quickly say, you're not a stutterer. That's not who you are. You weren't born a stutterer.
Right.
And you're not a stutterer. This is just something that we have to deal with. That's all. And there's just something about not denying what a man struggles with, not being offended by it, being able to laugh at it with him and say, it just doesn't define you. This is not your life. That's a powerful
thing. Well, let me step in there for a minute, Gary, because, you know, that diagram, I'm getting the sense everybody was like, what the heck? I don't get it. And it is difficult over the phone because, you know, I'm looking at it going, what the hell did I do? I don't get it. But it's like you went there, okay? When you're in relationship, there's this permission to say, well, of course you're like, you know, whatever you just shared. And not only is what you shared, quote, okay, because it's just true, you don't feel deeply enough about it. It's okay here. You don't have to be something you're not. And that's friendship. And that little diagram is trying to show, hey, you come in here and you let me look at the tip of the iceberg a little bit. And it's counterintuitive. But the friend would say, oh, not only is that true about you, but you don't even go deeply enough into that. What caused that? What do you really feel when you're there? How much pain is around that? I don't know if you see where I'm going, but that is aliveness. And again, I'm getting a little choked up because it's so rare. Here's a random story, but it illustrates. I met a man years ago, and you know, man, God just dropped in my life a very peculiar situation. and very different than me. He was an African American born in the inner city. I mean, we just, our stories were very different. And I remember a night where he was pursuing me and some of the pain and letting it out. And he, and I don't know how he did this, he ended up first kneeling on the carpet. They had a beautiful home down the street from us, and we were down in their den. And he ended up, you know, kneeling, and he ended up crying and crying out to God, even wailing. It's like he could feel what I couldn't let out. It was the weirdest thing. He wanted me to go there, and I watched a man heartbreak, and he was, you know, sort of praying, he was sort of talking to God, but I don't know, this is totally unrehearsed, I'm sorry guys, but I mean, I looked at that and said, how does he do that? I mean, his message to me is, oh David, what you're trying to hide, and now you're just trying to let me in a little bit, it is precious. In fact, you need to go in there, and you need to feel what it feels like. It's important. It's a chapter of your life. And he actually went there for me. And that's what that little diagram does. A good friendship never minimizes the man, right? I take you seriously. And we take their pain and their mistakes seriously. Not judgmentally, we take them seriously. Huh. So what did that feel like? I've asked some pretty straightforward questions about seasons in a man's life that he has never told anybody about because, you know, they were sinful and he was, you know, going to something he's just ashamed of. And I'm like, hey, it's okay. Let's not go there. I just want you to take me there. What were you doing? What did you feel? Friendship is amazing that way. So I guess we're way off the film at this point. But when Lionel gets, oh my golly, when Lionel gets Albert to sing, and he sings his pain, that really brought it around for me, and that's where the friendship was beautiful. If you know the scene I'm referring to, because
yeah, now, tell me more specifically when you said he got him to sing his pain, that was powerful. Say more about that, your experience.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's almost a metaphor. It's Birdie, I know you can't talk about this. And of course, you know, there's a speech impediment there. So he says,
the physical as well as emotional.
Right. But remember, when you sing, you stop stuttering. So I need you to go into that place. I need you to go into your story. We need to go there is basically what he's saying. And it's okay. Just sing it to me. Then you can get it out. And you don't think he's going to do it, right? Because he says, you know, he's, no way, man. I'm not going to sit here and warble in front of you. But he ends up doing it. And when he sings the words, it says, she didn't feed me. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He starts to share this really traumatic, dark season of his life where the nursemaid was starving him to death. And he just starts to open up a place in his life, which, of course, is right. That's where this is all coming from. This is where this stuff resides. But what I love about it, for me, metaphor is in the safety, in the comfort, and the intimacy of a good friendship. You don't have to sort of admit it. You can sing it. It's okay. There's no shame because of grace. There's no shame because of the real love of God, that when we do open up, even if it's dark.
Yep. Yeah, David, we have 5 more minutes before we close.
Okay.
But let me say, you know, the thing that strikes me as I'm hearing you say this is, how do we help a man tell his story when he stutters? In other words, like for Lionel, like for Birdie, Lionel said, I want you to sing it. For another man, it's, no, let's not sit here in my house. Let's go out and have a beer.
Yeah.
With another man, it's over a cup of coffee. With another man, it's, let's go take a walk. It's kind of like, what is it that helps a man actually speak, loose his tongue, if you will, to tell a story? And that's just striking me as you're saying that as such an important thing to think about with another man.
Yeah, you're kind of giving settings. Let me put this out here. I think this is going to answer your question, Gary. Whatever it looks like, let me use a term from Richard Rohr, give the man his narcissistic fix. That nailed me when I read it a couple of years ago. I'm like, wow, that sounds so heretical in my religious upbringing. You mean it gets to be all about me? And Rohr says, of course it does. You can't deny yourself until you've found something first. And so whatever the man needs, whatever setting, whatever process, journey, whatever, hanging out time, it let it be all about him. When a guy comes for life coaching, and I don't blubber like this usually, but I will say to him, hey, are you okay with letting 3 days be all about you? And they're not comfortable, Gary. They're just not. Because probably no 3 days have ever been just all about them. But you are showing a man so much honor and respect and a good kind of love when you say, hey, you know what, for the next 3 days, or, you know, that's a more formal thing, but, hey, in this friendship, it is allowed to be about you. And I don't know if that's answering your question,
mm-hmm.
but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, for Birdie, it was a speech impediment. And so we had to sing to move past that. For each of us, it's going to be something else. But Lionel is there, and he is clearly there for Birdie, for his life. He is the one, of course, in the film that sees the destiny of his life that he even refuses to admit. He sees it. He sees the man. He sees what he has become. He sees where he can go, and he will not back down. This is about you, and so much out in the world doesn't go that way, doesn't go that way at all. So does that sort of help? I don't know if I kind of took
well,
it off.
No, it does. And the other thing that strikes me is the idea that I wanted to say to man, okay, if this isn't about you, then are we gossiping about somebody else? I mean,
right.
I mean, Jesus doesn't have any problems, so we're not talking about him. So we got to talk about you. You're who's in the room. You're the person who matters. So, yeah, that's a fascinating idea. Okay, so let me ask you now. We got 2 minutes left.
Okay.
Just give us what else you wish you would have said, or help us give us your heart. What is it that's really on your heart with the effect of your life, how you want to touch people? What's important to you?
Well, let me finish with Rohr. Let me read something of his. He says, once you have your narcissistic fix, you have no real need to protect your identity, defend it, prove it, or assert it. And when a man can receive life, and he doesn't hear the words, God loves you and has, you know, whatever, wonderful plans for you, his reality actually corresponds to that. He rests, Gary. He becomes unedited. He doesn't have to keep striving and keep proving. He got his fix. And he continues to get his fix in a good relational way. Hey, I have some men in my life who are my allies. They let it be about me when it needs to be about me. And that is crucial to I think, to real friendship. Lionel Loeb put it this way. This is right out of his journal. He's speaking of the king. He is indeed a gallant fighter. And if a word doesn't quite go right, you know, he looks at me so pathetically, but then he gets on with the job. There is very little wrong with him. The only big thing is fear. And I go, wow, if we could get that when we face a man, no matter what situation he's in, to say, you know what just walked in my door and introduced himself is not the real man. It very seldom is. There is so much more to him and his life and his past and his future. He will be a gallant fighter, but someone needs to speak what is gallant into him. He will be an honorable man. But someone needs to speak honor into him.
Yeah.
You need to, you know, if you speak it in, then you can draw it out. And I guess that is what I loved about the film. At the end, and be my last statement, you remember at the beginning, Lionel refuses to go with the superficial titles. At the very end, King George says to Lionel, "Well done, my friend." So then Lionel responds, "You're welcome, Your Majesty." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, there you go. And of course, a lifelong friendship came from that. They were friends till they died. So in the end, the man's known, right? And he becomes. So
okay,
I think that's it.
Let me ask you this question. And Sam and Jeff, I'm going to ask you the same question, so prepare for this, okay? So, David, what was your favorite scene, one favorite scene in the movie, and why? And Sam, I want you to answer that, and then Jeff, and then I'll answer that, and we'll conclude.
I'll
I know there's many great scenes, but just name, give us your top favorite.
I think for me, when the scene I described, when he's able to articulate what really is going on in him, and then the scene that leads to he finally gets his voice right in Westminster Abbey. That's powerful.
Yeah. Okay. Sam?
I think it's the second one that David was just talking about. We're in Westminster Abbey. He sits in the Lionel sits in the on the throne, and he's challenging, he's cajoling, he's sort of going after something inside Bertie to rise up and finally be the man he's really is. And Lionel's doing everything he can to get something in Bertie to rise up, because Lionel sees it, but he knows that Bertie has to see it, and the only way Bertie can see it is if Bertie rises up. So, you know, Lionel's challenging, and finally Bertie says, "I have a voice."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Bertie's saying, "That's right." Excuse me, Lionel is saying, "That's right. I know it. I see it." But I like the challenging. I like the cajoling. I like doing everything to get the man himself to finally step into who he really is. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's beautiful example of friendship.
Yeah.
And Sam was powerful about that. He gets tough on him.
Oh, he gets really tough. I mean, Gary knows that one of my favorite quotes about friendship is from Oscar Wilde, who says, "A friend is someone who stabs you in the front." But but there's something right about that. I mean, Lionel is such a deep friend that he's going after him right in his face, right after him, but he's getting Bertie to finally acknowledge. He's stirring up that thing inside Bertie.
Well, where I'm going, he takes him seriously, and he finds, fine, if that's what you think about yourself, let me be the mirror back to you. You said you didn't want to be king. Why should I listen to you? So he ends up being a very forceful echo of the man. Okay, you want to live under this lie? Then here's your lie. You're not a king. You don't want to be king. You could never be king. And that's where he pushes the glory of the man out, because his dignity finally says, that's not true. He doesn't use those words, but that's the message. I do have a voice. Ta-da! He breaks through.
Yeah. Yep. Jeff, what about
you? It's a fierce love.
You know, I would like to, if I was going to teach to a group of men, I would show the scene at the Westminster Abbey, because it's what we do. David, it's what you do. Help another man find his voice. And it's all in that scene. But the scene that moves my heart the most is when it all comes down to he has to give the speech.
Oh, I love
and
this.
And he says,
I love this.
Bertie says, I'm scared. And Lionel says, just look at me. And, you know, I mean, is that a picture of Christ? You know, is that what Christ is saying to us?
He says,
you know,
just say it to me.
Just say it to me. Yeah, just say it to me. You know, and that's the friend that Christ wants to be with us, because we're going to get in situations where he's the only one we can look at, you know, and he's like, I'm there with you. I know it's hard. Just look at me, you know, say it to me.
And, you know, Jeff, I think the line actually was, forget everything else and say it to me. Say it to me as a friend.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That was so moving, right?
Yeah. It's funny, there's so many great, I mean, watching it again for me just a few nights ago with Lee, I mean, it hit me all over again. I mean, the movie is genius. Every line, the sequence of it, it's just amazing. And I know all of us listening could agree with every scene we mentioned. I guess the one I might pick out to be my very favorite, and not just to be different from the ones you guys mentioned, would be the scene we talked about earlier where they're sitting in Lionel's office and he comes in to talk about, you know, the pain he's just gone through with his father's death. And the whole thing of finally telling the rest of the story to, you know, Lionel just enjoying him, you know, telling a story over a glass of scotch, and then and recognizing things like, again, he said, you know, you're probably left-handed, aren't you, even though you've been forced to be right-handed. Just seeing things and saying it, but not saying it in a reprimanding or even a counselor type of a way. But again, ending with that line of, well, what are friends for? And for him to say, I don't know, I've never had one. But realizing he has one now, that to me, I just love the picture of what friendship will do and what we do for each other. I think what we do for each other, you know, around base camp and this type of thing. But so, David, thank you. What a powerful movie. And as Aaron said, he just said, thanks for prodding me to watch this movie again. So this has been a great conversation. And what's really fun is, David, we know this is what you do for others in your coaching and just in your life. So thank you for this evening.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. I appreciate it and appreciate guys listening and all of that. So if you haven't seen it, yeah, watch the film again. I think they'll pull more out of it than even what we've talked about. So
if you haven't seen the movie, yes, with David, I'll say go watch the movie. Make it an assignment. Secondly, I'll leave those clips up for a little while if you want to just see those clips again. So
yeah.
Everyone, thank you. David, thank you. Jeff, Sam, thank you. And everyone listening. And
thanks, everybody.
We will see you next week. See ya.
See you guys.
Bye, guys.